together again, you and I, chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, January 14th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We talked about the latest political twist in Bridgeport. This one, believe it or not, involves a controversial drone contract. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Hard dropped by to chat about the governor's race and the sale of a state utility, and University of New Haven associate professor of homeland and national security and international affairs, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, analyzed the current situation going on in Iran.
So before she passed away, the great Aretha Franklin, the queen of soul, she had a song out, wow, must have been 20, 25 years ago. I probably should have looked this up. She had a song out called Who's Zoomin' Who? Right? And we all like, come on, who's lying to who? Who's not being truthful here? Who's trying to, you know, blank with who? You know what I mean? Remember that? Who's zooming? Who? Great song. Great song. Maybe I'll look it up here. And that's the question I'm asking here. With you fine people, as we're up and underway on a Tuesday, the 14th of January. And last week, I think it was last week, and maybe the week before, I don't know. It was relatively recently, where we had that story in the local media, in the Connecticut Post, and some of the TV outlets, too, that Bridgeport was going to lease a couple of drones from this company called Flock, F-L-O-C-K, I guess, as in flock of things flying. They are a drone company. And I remember the picture being there, and I think we had the audio here on WICC of saying, hey, what a great idea this is. And the state, they got $500,000 from the state. I'm like, great. And they're going to use them, they say, for missing persons, for fire scenes, for crime scenes. Again, if there's an officer in the fire department or the police department or somebody in line with either, somebody's on duty, hey, get the drone up there. It's 2 miles away. Get us some pictures first of a fire, especially with a fire. Or looking for somebody that may be hiding, like, we can use this. And I said to myself, and I did not mention this on the air. I didn't. But I was thinking about it. I even wrote it down on my little scratch pad here in front of me. I remember writing it down saying words to the effect of, I think I wrote something like drones and opposition. And we reported that story, and I said, geez, I'm surprised there's no opposition to this. From the usual suspects, the people that don't like, all of a sudden, you know, they'll put anything they want online. Their pictures, they'll go to Facebook, they'll go to YouTube, they'll go to Instagram, they'll go to dating sites, they'll send, you know, all manner of nude selfies to each other. But I said to myself, you watch. The usual suspects are not going to want these drones because, well, the cops might be able to find people. And I said to myself, and gosh darn it, I should have said it to you folks. I just thought it, though. I said, well, let me not be so cynical here regarding this. But I said, you know what? There's going to be an immigration angle to this. Now, having said that, and I'm just saying what we all know, what you and I can read, and what we heard on the radio station this morning. And by the way, we should tell you, Melissa just got a hold of me. She messaged me tomorrow morning at 7:05. The company now that's really being raked over the coals here, because there are some people saying, oh, well, Flock works with ICE. Maybe they do. Maybe they do work with ICE to get some dirtbag criminal illegals off the streets of the city of Bridgeport. That's not a good thing. But we'll have a representative from Flock tomorrow morning here on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Now, why would you bring that person on, Paul? What's the deal? Now, hang with me here. The reason that is given in the paper, Hearst Connecticut Media, good story there, is that I guess some members of the Bridgeport City Council, I'm just reading what everybody knows, says, well, the proper procedure wasn't followed. All right? And every city council, every town council, every board of alders, they generally have a contract committee. meaning if it's going to be above a certain amount of money, it's got to be approved. Well, okay, whatever. And now there are allegations that, well, the mayor's office, Mayor Gant, and by the way, if any of the people involved in the particulars want to call up and comment, feel free. Come on in. The water's fine. Lots of chlorine in this water. Nice and clean. And there are allegations that, well, the mayor wasn't upfront about it. The police department, the fire department wasn't upfront about it. Now, I'm reading this and I'm saying to myself, well, okay, maybe that is a valid concern. Maybe they did not. This 500 grand was not allocated or contracted for or accounted for in certain ways that, say, the Bridgeport City Council usually works in or the city charter usually mandates. Okay. Or is it about something else? Because I find it hard to believe. Now, it doesn't mean it's not the truth. I find it hard to believe. And there are people that says, well, we were kept in the dark about the... All right, well, if the keeping in the dark thing has any truth to it, it means one of two things. Either you were kept in the dark on purpose because certain people didn't want you to know, or maybe your communication isn't good with the people that should know. Now, we did get a member of the Bridgeport City Council who called in, I guess, this morning, right, Chris, to Melissa's program, talking about maybe another factor as to why these two or three leases, this lease for two or three drones is now on hold. And again, the initial story was, well, it was the procedure. Maybe part of it is the procedure. Or, as I said yesterday, are we kneeling down to illegals again? And I'm sorry I have to put it that way, but this is the kind of stuff now where you do it and people who don't live in Bridgeport or don't live in a blue city look and they shake their heads. They shake their heads. So, Chris, I understand this is Jeanette Herron, right? From the who is this morning? Can you tell me that once again? My mind is a sip. Okay, Council President calls in this morning and engages in a nice little Q&A with Melissa.
The drones will help in so many situations that we've needed help before.
Okay.
I think it's the idea of having Flock with all the release of information, working with the federal government, working with ICE. These are articles that we found and contracts being canceled all over with Flock.
Okay, so what is it then? Who's zooming who? Is it Flock or is it the contract procedure? Or is it both? Who's zooming who here? Just be honest with us. And maybe it is both. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And if Flock is leasing the drones, so what? Who cares? Well, you know, they work together with ICE and this. And again, this stuff comes from the same people who will give out their social security number like it's coming out of a bag of Skittles. They will go online and give all manner of information on shopping sites and dating sites and whatever, legal or otherwise. Yet because there's a drone company that may have some connection to the federal government and ICE, we're going to stop this? Now, maybe are they going to contract somebody else? Do we not want to help the police department and the fire department? Or as somebody pointed out in this article, I guess one of the councilors, city council people said, you know, you can get a drone up fast and look for, say, a missing elderly person who may have dementia or memory issues. So please, somebody explain to me, Lucy. Somebody explain to me. All right? I'm going to have to call Fred. What is it here? Is it the Is it the fact that the city council, as a lot of them are saying, well, the procedure wasn't followed correctly, or is that just BS? Because you're not going to convince me that nobody on the city council knew about this? Come on. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So, come on. Are the good people of Bridgeport being lied to? Is this a political two-step? Hey, we'll say it's the contracting procedure. But actually, we're afraid of ICE? I'm telling you. This whole anti-ICE thing, keep right on doing it, and it's going to turn out like defund the police. How did that work out? A little over a week ago, there was a big announcement in Bridgeport. Mayor Ganim was there. I guess the police and fire chiefs were there. And they were saying, hey, we're contracting with this company called Flock to, I guess, set up a lease scenario where you have a couple, three drones that would be used in some emergency situations in Bridgeport, right? And like they're using a lot of other cities and towns across the U.S., fires, missing people, kids missing, the elderly wandering off or whatever, and police situations. And I said at the time, I said, boy, it's a great idea. I said, but I'm, I remember thinking to myself, hey, self, aren't you surprised nobody is complaining about this? And self said to self, yes, self, I am. And now we have this, and Melissa talked about it on her show this morning. She'll be joined by a person from Flock tomorrow at 7:35, she just told me. And this person will be on to discuss, I guess, what the talks were like in the city, because apparently a couple of city council committees, which is within their purview, I'm not saying they did anything they didn't have the right to do, but they shot down a contract to equip emergency responders with drones. The state, I guess, somehow the state was able to get $500,000 for this. Councilwoman Dasha Spell said at the end of the day, it was the way it was presented. Spell and colleague Richard Ortiz, co-chair of the Contracts Committee, which along with the council's public safety group, co-hosted a Tuesday special meeting last night. One key complaint they and other colleagues had is that the local legislative body was not properly appraised of the drone plan. All right? Says here in this story by Brianna Garciolo and our friend Brian Lockhart, Police Chief Roderick Porter and other officials with the mayor's office have been working behind the scenes for roughly 2 years to bring the equipment to town for the police force and the fire department. They got help from State Senator Haron Gaston of Bridgeport. The senator probably had something to do with getting the $500,000. So let me ask this. Riddle me this, Batman. If members of the Bridgeport General Assembly legislation in Hartford, if they were active in this, if the mayor's office was active in this, if the police department was active in this, if the fire department was active in this, and the city council didn't know how exactly. That is something I guess if lips stay locked long enough, I guess you can keep things secret. And let's just say for argument's sake, I could be wrong here. Let's just say for argument's sake, the mayor's office, Senator Gaston, maybe some other people in the Bridgeport delegation, the police chief, the fire chief, whatever. Let's say they didn't tell the city council about it. Could there be a reason why they didn't want the city council to know about this? Now, again, I have no horse in this race. I don't live in Bridgeport. I want the city to do as well as humanly possible. But I can step back from the 10th floor and look down and take a look at this stuff. There's something weird here. What do you think about this whole thing? Is this whole thing about the contract not being handled the proper way, which is the story we're being given? Okay, I'll take that at face value. Is that a smokescreen? Is that just because, as we had the president tell Melissa this morning, the city council, and, you know, there are considerations because of flock. Is that the real reason? Maybe it's not, or maybe it is. So again, we're going to have a representative from Flock on the radio station tomorrow morning. Don't miss it, 7:35, Melissa in the morning. Tomorrow, Flock will give their side of the story tomorrow at 7:35 on WICC. Now, we told you earlier today, and it's been over the news, I guess there was some little service disruption or interruption with several hundred thousand people, customers of Verizon. Now, I was okay. Some people are still experiencing it. So we had to go to an alternate mode because we change on the fly here at the Connoisseur Media. And it's a hockey thing, folks. You know, it's always hockey with me. And Dan Hart joins us. He is maneuvering his way around the Verizon problem, but he is here. Now I'm going to channel him through my speakerphone the old-fashioned way. Dan, come in. Dan, can you hear me?
I'm in. Are we making hockey analogies? I'm the Joel Quenneville of media here, trying to be the old guy piecing it together.
Wow, a Joel Quenneville illusion. I didn't think I would get that. That's very good, Dan. Very good.
I just saw him on TV last night.
All right. Dan, let's talk about, if we can, for example, and folks, again, sounds kind of thin here, but if you're experiencing the Verizon thing, you understand here. So, Dan, couple of things. Number one, the Aquarian thing here. You wrote a piece a few days ago, and I did see that, regarding Aquarian and whether or not the Aquarian sale here, I believe, would be such a bad deal as people are making it out to be. Talk about that.
Well, I think everybody who's not working for either Aquarian or RWA, the Regional Water Authority of South Central Connecticut, i.e. the New Haven Area Water Company, those are the two parties to the merger. It seems that everyone in the world who's not on the payroll of one of those believes that this would be bad for ratepayers.
Yeah.
And so since those companies are so adamantly saying that no, everybody has it wrong, and by everybody I mean PURA, the Office of Consumer Counsel, and the Attorney General's Office, not to mention the Governor's Office, not to mention every Republican in Connecticut and many Democrats, I would look into it. And so the bottom line is I spent a whole lot of time reading hundreds of pages of documents, and their argument at Aquarion that this could be good for ratepayers, not bad, makes logical sense. It doesn't mean they're right, because what you do is you're taking away the need to pay a profit, right? The earnings that, yep, that we always fight about. They're taking away the higher cost of borrowing because it's a public entity. RWA, like the MDC in the Hartford area, is a public entity, and they get lower borrowing rates. You're taking away the need for a number of different regulatory issues that cost money, right? And so in exchange for that, you're taking this entity out from under state regulation by our friends at PURA.
Yeah.
The wash is that there's a big fight over, does that mean that they would get any rate hikes they want, right? So the PURA people and the Tongs and the governors of the world are saying, well, gee whiz, if they aren't under PURA, that means that they're going to be able to get away with rate hikes that we cannot regulate. Mm-hmm. But the pure financial look at this says that because they don't have costs that are built into a private company, well, they don't pay taxes. That's another thing. They don't pay state and federal income taxes.
Yeah.
It's going to save money. We don't have the ability to know the answer, but we know that the judge is very soon going to make a decision on the lawsuit by Aquarion and RWA against PURA for rejecting the merger on November 19th.
Now, Dan, you say we don't have the answers to this, but now, obviously nobody really knows. But have there been analyses or analyses done on this? Is it this case of both sides are presenting their own version of what may or may not happen?
That's exactly right. And I got, there's no rabbi here.
Yeah.
Right? there's no oracle, you know, call it what you will. There's no high priest, there's no archbishop who can settle all disputes. And so you have the Office of Consumer Counsel which said in filings, this is all official communication.
Yeah.
The OCC said that this is going to cost ratepayers more over time, because even though there is savings from not having to pay higher borrowing rates and taxes and profits, the cost of this merger is going to be $6 billion when you include the interest payments on the $2.4 billion merger, right? Over 40 years.
Yeah.
And what Aquarion is saying is you got that wrong, because the current rates that we're paying, that customers are paying, are already going to cover the acquisition cost.
Got it.
And so that is the fundamental, at the core disagreement. And as many pages as you want to read of documents, you can't get past that dispute. And I even quoted Claire Coleman, the Consumer Counsel for the state of Connecticut,
yeah,
who said to me in an on-the-record quote, we cannot figure this out. There's no – right? And she –
so that's comfort. Hey, Dan, that's comforting. I like that. That's good.
Well, you got to give her credit for honesty.
Yeah.
But she makes the point. She's not saying we can't figure it out because we're stupid. She's saying we can't figure it out because Aquarion / RWA
sure
has not succeeded in making a clear enough argument. And so since under merger rules that are subject to utility regulation, the applicant has the obligation to make the case, just like your teenage kid has the applicant the obligation to make the case that she should be able to borrow the car for the weekend, right? It's always in the hands of the person asking,
yeah,
to make the case. OCC and PURA are saying, I have to be careful what I say PURA is saying, because they issued a ruling.
Yeah.
But OCC and the Attorney General's office are saying they simply didn't prove the case. Aquarion is saying, yes, we did prove the case. We can go no further. The documents don't shed light on
interesting
this, right?
See, Dan, this all fuels my argument, and I'm one of the few conservatives in this state that will say the state should just buy everything. The state should run the water company, and the state should run the power companies, just like they did on Long Island, where they got rid of Lilco and they went to LIBA. I'm all for state ownership of this stuff, Dan Haar. How about you?
Yeah, how'd that work with Shoreham Nuke?
Yeah, well,
they put $20 billion into it, and it never generated a single kilowatt hour of electricity.
Well, nothing.
How'd that work out on Lilco there?
Well, listen, you can bat 3 out of 10 and be in the Hall of Fame for 20 years. But I digress. Hey, finally, you wrote an interesting piece, and I kind of saw this too, being the political junkie I am, and I'm saying, oh, Ned Lamont says we'll take some fundraising dollars too. Is that an effort now with maybe some younger candidates, Dan Haar, that he could be facing on the Republican side? Is that get more people involved and say, hey, I'm not just the rich white guy from Lower Fairfield County. I'm not that stuffy.
There are 3 or 4 factors. One, let's just to be clear on what the news is here. The governor has raised $85,000 mm-hmm. from private contributors. At this point in the campaign 4 years ago, he had raised exactly zero.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he raised $560,000 from contributors, and he spent $25 million of his own dollars.
Yep.
Right. So if he's only raised 85 and he's going to stop there, then he's right where he was 4 years ago. But so far, about half the money he's raised has been from contributors. Now, to your question, why is he doing it? Number one, just what you said, younger candidates. He wants to show that he's still in the game of grassroots politics.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, maybe he's actually afraid of maybe he thinks that, because remember, fundraising is done for two reasons. One is to raise money. Well, obviously, he doesn't need the money, right? That's certainly not a factor. He's not raising the money because Annie says, sorry, the checkbook is closed. That's not happening, right? So one reason to raise money is to get people involved.
Yeah.
If you have skin in the game, if I give $50 to Kristen Gillibrand, since I don't want to name a Connecticut person,
yeah,
in New York, right, then during that campaign, I have skin in the game. I may talk her up. Maybe I'll go to a rally. Maybe I'll knock on some doors. Your money talks. And so the governor may be thinking, this is a way to get people involved. And the third factor is just very simply, he has a new team this time around and a new strategy, and things are moving more quickly because of Josh Elliott, his opponent on the Democratic side. He could theoretically face a primary, although Josh Elliott's fundraising is not robust enough to get him there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may just be that they're looking at the schedule and they're looking at the picture and saying different team has a different strategy.
You still think Betsy McCoy gets in?
Only at this point, if she has a Loctite agreement with Trump, where she says she goes in with his endorsement. Because if she doesn't go in day one with his endorsement, or day 10, if she doesn't go in knowing she's going to get his loud endorsement, she has zero chance. But as you obviously know, in the Republican Party, it only takes, as we've discussed, about 80,000 votes to win a primary.
Yep.
And Donald Trump can get her that if he want, if he works at it. He can do it.
Interesting. Dan Haar, senior editor and columnist, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, we pulled it off. We did it the old-fashioned way. Microphone open, you on a speaker, and we did it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Just call me Joel Quenneville.
Okay. Thanks, Joel Quenneville. There you go, with a longtime Hartford Whaler name there. Dan reaching back to his hockey roots back when he was a photographer of the Whale. All right, we go from controversies to drone contracts in Bridgeport to what's happening halfway around the world. Many, of course, concerned here in the U.S., Connecticut's Iranian population as well. University of New Haven Associate Professor of Homeland and National Security and International Affairs, one of our go-to guys, Dr. Matthew Schmidt here to give us his notion as to what's going on in Iran as we speak. Tends to change hour by hour. Matt, good to have you back again on short notice. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks, Paul. It's always good to be here.
Thank you, sir. What do you hear? What do you know from your point of view? What's happening right now in Iran, Matt? What's going on?
So the immediate cause of these protests is the collapse of the rial, the collapse of the Iranian currency that happened in late last year. Mm-hmm. So there's been a series of rolling protests. They have gotten huge. They are all across the country. The regime is clearly afraid, and they have cut off communication. They have opened some communication back up in the last 24 hours, I was just reading. But that's the short of it. You know, it looks like the death count right now coming out from some human rights organizations is listing at about 2,500 verified. I would view that as a floor, not a ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the regime has arrested some 18,000-19,000 people. And it's talking about doing quick trials and many executions. And so these are signs that the regime is losing control.
This is not, Matt, the first time this has happened. This tends to happen, just thinking back on this, every 4, 5, 6 years. I know it happened during at least the Obama years once or twice, and the regime there has always been able to kind of bounce back and get its grip again. Are they going to be able to do that this time or not?
It's always hard to say. It looks different. You know, if you draw that line that you laid out here, I would take it back to 2009. Mm-hmm. And the reaction to the killing of a young woman who was seeking greater rights for, yep, Iranian women. Mm-hmm. That brought out large protests. Those are probably the largest protests before these. But it's important for listeners to remember that Iran is not some sort of backwards place.
Oh, no.
The U.S. has been involved in Iran for decades. This is a place with highly talented, universities and scientists and teachers and artists. And the regime has always lived on a kind of knife's edge with its approach, with its deep animosity towards anything but its version of, mm-hmm, Sunni Islam. So this is nothing new. This is a tension that's been boiling for a long time, and it's now coming up.
The power structure, Matt Schmidt, I know that obviously we hear about the mullahs all the time, the supreme leader, the IRGC. I guess Iran still has a president, right? Who's the real boss there? Is it Khamenei?
So ultimately, yes, but Iran has politics. And every so, mm-hmm, often you get a real election with a president that becomes a release valve. And the president is more liberal than the Ayatollah, is able to come in and do things that the Ayatollah can't do politically. And if things go bad, then the Ayatollah can blame the president. That's kind of the way it works. There's a working parliament,
yeah,
and a judiciary. And so my point in all of this is there's real politics and there are real people who are sympathetic to the protesters, who are in power, and who represent, a potential capacity to take over.
If the U.S. did anything under Mr. Trump's order here, Matt, you and I know this doesn't have to be bombs and attacks, does it? I mean, we do cyber stuff all the time. So does North Korea. So does Iran. I mean, you know, this could go to all other levels, could it not, without anything exploding? Or am I being naive here?
No. My view is that I'm sure those things are already happening. We know that Starlink is doing beamforming. Mm-hmm. They're setting up ways to get around regime jamming so that information can get out of Iran, but also so that information on one side of Iran can be transmitted to the other so that the public knows what the regime is doing. That's a relatively simple thing to do. Mm-hmm. You can bet that Israel is engaged, and you can bet that part of the dynamic that's going on with the regime, insiders, is they're thinking back to when Israel came in and managed to identify all the key scientists in the nuclear program and assassinate them.
Yeah.
Right in Tehran and in other secured places. And so they have to be worried that might happen, which is going to both force them to overreact in sort of blunt ways, because they can't be surgical about it, because they can't operate out in the open, mm-hmm. because they're afraid of these threats.
And Matt, finally, I remember talking about this with experts years and years ago. Demographically, is Iran still as young as it was, particularly on the male side years ago, when all those young men in that Iran-Iraq war in the mid to late 80s up to 1990s lost their lives? Is the Iranian population still as young as it once was?
I'm not sure about the sex demographics, but it is a young population, and mm-hmm. that's a lot of what you see here are smart people who are just saying, look, we want to live our lives. We don't want to be under this religious regime. We have a capacity to be a rich country and to live at a higher standard of living than we've been allowed to live because of the things that the regime is doing. That's kind of always been the tension, right? It's not a place where mm-hmm. the general public supports the regime. They've sort of accepted it out of fear for decades, and that's changing now because the ability to live that life, even at the level that's been going on, is suddenly disappearing. And so people are sort of saying, well, what do we have to lose?
Yeah. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven, Associate Prof, Homeland and National Security and International Affairs. Matt, thanks as always. We appreciate it. Take care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. All right.
I appreciate it. Yep, Dr. Matthew Schmidt there. So there you go.